Yo, what's good, everybody? This is your boy, Sparky Lee, and we are at the U.S. Open, finally. I have not been covering a whole lot of golf up until this point, just the majors and a few ones early on, but we're back. We're back for the majors. I'm not going to miss this one, you know? I'm a little buzzed. I had my golf league tonight, but we're going to power through it. Let's get right into it. Torrey Pines Golf Course. They play the Farmers Insurance Open here every year since, I believe, 1968. And it's just north of San Diego in La Jolla, California. Usually plays as a par 72, and I saw it at 7,800 yards. But now it is a par 71 at 7,685 yards. So they've shortened it up a little bit, but they also took a stroke away. So it plays one less stroke. If you're looking through my spreadsheets and stuff, when you're seeing the last 5 years here at the course or at the event, know that the U.S. Open is not played at the same event every year. So it's at Torrey Pines this year. It was at Winged Foot. It was at Shinnecock Hills. I think I'm missing one in there. So it bounces around quite a bit, but the course history refers to the event, the U.S. Open, and not the course. So take that with a grain of salt when you're reading through it. It still helps a little bit, but just know it's not the same course. Torrey Pines hosted the U.S. Open in 2008, and Tiger Woods won that in a playoff, and that was his last major win until the Masters in 2019, I do believe. Torrey Pines has two courses, the North and the South. For the Farmers Insurance Open, they play both courses. So they play the North once and the South once in the first two rounds, and then they play the South the last two rounds. But here, like in 2008 at the U.S. Open, the entire thing is held at the South. And the South was redesigned, or was designed by William F. Bell, Poa Anna Grass. It was redesigned in 2001, right before the other U.S. Open in 2008 that was held here. It was redesigned by Rees Jones. Let's see. I guess the only real big difference you're going to see from the Farmers Insurance Open. I'm going to mess that up a few times. That's the last time I'm going to say it. The only difference other than it being a par 71 is that the rough is going to be longer. The fairways are going to be tighter. But that's what you usually see at a U.S. Open. So it's going to play harder than it normally does. But that's pretty standard for the U.S. Open. So you're not going to see quite the same scores that you would see at a Farmers Insurance Open. There, I nailed it. Key stats. The kind of generic to a U.S. Open. Kind of specific to this one, too, because we do have the Farmers Insurance Open. Strokes gained tee to green. Par 4 scoring, bogey avoidance, always important. Key stats unique to this event, strokes gained putting, proximity, 3-putt avoidance. I would also add in this week driving distance, par 5 scoring. But those are, you know, it's kind of, it's tough to nail down what stats are important for a U.S. Open just because it always changes courses. So for the field, there's a lot of sectional qualifiers. If you look at my cheat sheet, you'll see a lot of guys at the bottom that just have no stats, no PGA Tour history. So you can really whittle this thing down to about 80 golfers, 100 golfers, just because there's a few guys way at the bottom that just have as much chance winning as I do this weekend. So you can really kind of narrow it down if you leave those guys out, and I think most people will. My big bets for this weekend is Brian Harman -120 tournament head-to-head versus Phil Mickelson, both left-handed. Phil is coming off of the win at the PGA Championship. At the Masters, he finished 21st, I believe. But if you look at Phil's 16 prior events to that PGA Championship win, his 21st place at the Masters was the only time he cracked the top 30 in 16 events. I love Phil. He's one of the best to ever do it. But he struggles with keeping his focus. And he's, the last, I don't know, 3 years or so, he's just been really rocky. And if things don't all fall into place, he just kind of checks out. And he, you know, it helps him at the majors, and that's probably why this line is so close, that they're kind of baking into that cake that Phil is going to take this very seriously. He's going to focus in. But I just don't see it. I think Phil got his win. He's pretty content with that. And if he starts spraying it early on, he's going to check right out. And then Brian Harman can have an easy win there. And Brian Harman, his last three tries at the U.S. Open, all 40th place finishes are better. Brian Harman's been golfing way better lately when you look at the consistency of these two. So I think Brian Harman -120 is kind of a steal there. If you're paying for Phil there, you're paying for the name more than anything, and that one win that just boosts him up, and all of a sudden the books think that Phil is like back to his former self. But Phil's much older. I think -120 for Brian Harman there is kind of a steal. And by the time Thursday hits, that's probably going to move the other way from sharp people betting it. But that's me assuming that I'm a sharp person, and I'm not. So I'm probably wrong there. But that's what my guts tell me. My other bet for this weekend is Corey Connors -110 versus Gary Woodland. Gary won the U.S. Open in 2019. I want to say that was at Pebble Beach. Don't quote me on that. In his last handful of events, Gary Woodland, I believe, has a fifth place finish, a sixth place finish. He's had a rough stretch since that U.S. Open win, but he has a couple gems hidden in there lately. But when you look at his last nine events, and that dates back to the World Golf Championship, what the hell was that called? Workday Charity. World Golf Champ, whatever the one that used to be the World Golf Championship, Mexico one, Workday Charity, whatever it was. Since then, he's played in nine events. He's missed three of those nine cuts, and his average finish has been 50th place. And then you look at Corey Connors, who's -110 against him. Since that, he didn't play in that World Golf Championship, but he played the following week in the, I want to say it was the Honda Classic. I don't know exactly off the top of my head, but he's played in 10 events. He's made all 10 cuts. His average finish has been 19th place. He's, the last 5 years, he's only played in two U.S. Opens. He's looked bad in them. But Corey Connors, this last year and a half or so, has been a way better player than he has been throughout his entire PGA Tour career so far. So Corey Connors, I'm kind of throwing out that U.S. Open history and saying, you know, Corey Connors has been a monster, finishing 19th place on average in his last 10 events. Hasn't missed a cut in his last 10 events. -110 against Gary Woodland, who is struggling to make cuts. Absolutely give me Corey Connors here. I don't care what his U.S. Open history looks like. My other bets, first round leader, I've been on Peter Molnati. He's struggled. I don't know what, I think he had a kid. don't quote me on this, but a few months back, I think he had a kid, and he's looked very rocky ever since. And the same thing happened to Sergio. Sergio won the green jacket, and then I think he had a kid shortly after that, and then he just fell off the map. And I think it was kind of, there's these weird things with golf where it's so individual and so how much work are you putting in, how much are you focusing on your game, where it can, recent history and course history, you can throw a lot of that stuff out the window if somebody just hasn't been golfing lately or something's distracting them, whatever that may be. But I think Peter Molinari had, I want to say he had a kid, and this is going to be my running theory. He looked decent. He kind of fell off lately, but he's still a guy that every once in a while, just because his putting is so good, he can score well, and he tends to get off to better starts than what he should be compared to his odds. So I like Peter Molinari as a first-round leader, 200-1. Let's see, it was the Wells Fargo. He started off, I want to say, 4-under, and he was 2 shots off the lead, and this was, I don't know, a month and a half ago. And then before that, his next best first-round start was at the Farmers Insurance Open, where he finished 2 strokes off the lead again there. So he's played well at this course, especially in the first round. He's been very hit or miss, so it's first round leader. It's not like I need him to make cuts. I need him to beat somebody out for the whole tournament. I just need one good round from him, and he's one of those guys that can kind of do it. So I have him at plus 200-1. And in the last year, he's had 2 first round leaders, maybe 3. I think it might just be 2. So he's great value. So it's like every one out of every, 25 tournaments, he's first round leader, tied for first round leader. And if his number's at 200-1, 100-1 in a smaller tournament, 100-1 would be good value on him. 200-1, pretty good value on him. So I'm going to take that here. I'm not saying it's going to hit because it's obviously 200-1, but it's, maybe it should be 125-1 for what his actual value is. But I'm also taking him to top 10 after the first round at 20-1. And I think that's actually really good value too, because his last 2 good starts where he was 2 strokes off the lead, and one of them being at this course this year. So 20-1 for that is probably not a bad bet either. The other first round leader I'm taking is Rory. I've been doing him a lot at 33-1 this tournament. But he's one of the guys that if you look at the last few years on tour, getting off to a good start early, that's Rory. And he's the opposite of Molinari, where tee to green, great, can't putt worth a shit. But when his putter is on, he is extremely good. So he can go very low in specific rounds. So Rory and Molinari are kind of opposite ends of the spectrum for low round guys that just pop off randomly. So I love those two for first round leader here. But I mean, this is a US Open. There's a lot of great golfers in here. So I don't want to go too heavy in first round leaders or anything crazy here, because anything can happen at a US Open. So I'm going light with my betting this week. Those are my 2 first round leader bets. The 3 technically, because I'm betting Molinari twice. Top 20 bet, Webb Simpson, plus 188. Dude has been a freaking monster. Hold on, I'm going to take a sip of beer. My spreadsheet is just loading up so I can look at the actual numbers here. But I want to read off Webb's last finishes in U.S. Opens. And at plus 188, to be top 20 is pretty good odds for Webb here. Drinking Modelo. Usually I drink the hard stuff when I'm doing these, but Modelo just to kind of ease into it, because I was golfing earlier and drinking. Okay, Webb Simpson last year So technically, this was last year's U.S. Open was in September. He finished 8th place. Year before that, he finished 16th place. Year before that, he finished 10th place. Year before that, 35th place. So 3 finishes straight in the top 20, and he's plus 188 to top 20 here. So I love him. We haven't seen him since the PGA Championship. He hasn't been playing a whole lot of golf. That kind of concerns me, but he finished 30th at the PGA Championship. He's looked really solid. He can play in these bigger tournaments, and his floor is always pretty high. So Webb Simpson seems like tremendous value, because when I'm looking at how Vegas likes these guys, and I'm looking at it from a chronological order of DraftKings pricing, Xander Schauffele, Victor Hovland, Patrick Cantlay, Patrick Reed, Tony Finau, Hideki Matsuyama are all priced right in front of Webb Simpson, and I have zero value for their betting numbers, whether it be to win, top 5, top 10, top 20, top 40, first round leader, and that's because Vegas loves those guys. And so, you know, if you want to side with Vegas, hop on in there. You want to sign with me because I'm a degenerate loser? Webb Simpson, top 20, plus 188, book it. But I, like I said, I usually go a couple top 20s, couple top 10s, couple top 40s. I'm not really touching it that much this week because I don't see great betting value. And I haven't done, I haven't followed golf as closely as I have in the past few years running into this event. So I don't feel as confident making a few of these bets. So I'm going real light. And I have only one winner bet right now, and it moved on me. So it's Matthew Wolf, who finished 2nd place in the U.S. Open, his first time at the U.S. Open. He had the lead, 2-stroke lead going into the 4th round, and then Bryson ended up whooping everybody. And ever since then, Wolf has been a little shaky. I think he got DQ'd. He withdrew randomly from the PGA Championship, so I think there's a lot of funky stuff going on. But if you're betting Matthew Wolf, he's a good tournament play, probably, depending on where his ownership is. And he's a good winner bet or top 5 bet, because he's one of those guys that just, he's a young dude, a lot of talent, doesn't seem to get shook by, a big, heavy field of great golfers or a major. So he can finish high. He's 225-1 to win it. But that was on DraftKings this morning when I loaded everything into the spreadsheet. By the time I bet it, he was 200-1 to win it. So I think his true number should be 175 or 150-1 right now to win it all. But it's just because he's had such a weird, shaky DQ, and he withdrew from a tournament, that they're kind of not putting any faith in him. But that's such a weird thing to do with a guy that can win a major. So he's my only bet right now. And the reason I'm doing that is because I think you can find quite a bit of value in the later rounds here, because I'm looking at, the last winner of the U.S. Open was Bryson. The winner before that was, who won? Let's see. Oh, it was Gary Woodland. Bryson, Gary Woodland. Brooks Koepka before that, Brooks Koepka before that, Dustin Johnson before that. So it's been monsters that usually end up winning this. So I don't want to bet them right now while it's like Dustin Johnson is 15-1 to win it. Like, that's not great value. If you feel great about it, I mean, I don't blame you for putting some money on them right now at this point. But when Bryson won it, he started after the first round, he was 4 strokes back. Gary won it the year before. He was 3 strokes back after the first round, off the leader after the first round. Before that, Brooks was beyond 4 strokes back. I'd have to look at it. Let's see. Brooks shot a 75 in the first round when he won it in 2018. The year before that, Brooks was 2 shots back off the lead and won it. And Dustin Johnson was 1 stroke back off of the lead after the first round in 2016 when he came back and won it. So I think there's going to be so much value to be had after the first round, after the second round, when you're looking at guys that are, 3-4 strokes back off of the lead. It's not, there in the last 5 years, there hasn't been a guy that goes wire to wire first round leader to win it. And I'll even look back at where guys tend to finish. I guess it kind of bounces around a little bit. But some of the guys that start off in the upper 60s finish well, but it's just so hard at a U.S. Open the way they set these courses up to, shoot a 65 like Ricky did in 2017. First round leader, shot a 65. Where did he finish? Tied for fifth, not bad, but he shot a 73 in the next round. It's so easy to go, mid-70s in one round and just kind of force your way out of it, or mid-70s early on and then go 68, 67 like Brooks did in 2017 and win it. So I think the books will kind of be sharp to it, but I would kind of, after the first day, after the second day, find guys that are a couple strokes off of the lead that you're like, he might have a shot to run up there and make a run at the win here, and then look at different books that you have and find some good numbers for them, because U.S. Opens are just, tough to win. Tough course setup, tough to win. I usually run through everybody here and kind of pick out my, DFS plays, who I really rely on here, who I think has a chance of being low ownership, but, a high floor or high ceiling guy, I should say, where they could finish in the top five, but people aren't really counting on them. Usually I do those and I'll run through, but I feel like I got to soak in some of the information here a little bit more than I have. Cause I'm just not as golf ready. I'm not in mid-season form like I usually am at this point. So I don't think, maybe Wednesday, tomorrow afternoon, I'll come out with a list of like, hey, here's my favorite cash plays for GPP. These guys you can plug into any lineup. And then here's some of my favorite, tournament plays, just high, super high ceiling guys. And then some sleepers that nobody's really talking about or people are kind of overlooking. But I need to, soak this in a little bit more. So I think I'm going to leave this one short. Usually these are like an hour and a half long, something crazy. But this one is going to be short. I might even throw out some random bets, because I only have, 4 or 5 bets that I have set in stone right now. And I know I'm good, especially with first round. I didn't see anything when I checked this morning for really first round matchups other than three ball matchups. And I don't love doing three ball matchups because there's so much. You add that third golfer in there, and there's a little more volatility and unpredictability going into that. So I don't love three balls. I like head-to-head matchups a little bit better. So maybe tomorrow when I get a chance to plug in some first-round head-to-head matchups, I'm going to tweet some of those out, tweet a couple more bets out. But for now, I think I'm just going to leave it at that. You got the course information. You got some of my bets and reasoning. You got the cheat sheet, which is probably the most helpful thing. If anybody, if you look at my articles, which this is my 500th one I've posted, I guess, apparently. Some of them are small, so it's not that big a deal. But if you look at my articles, if you listen to these podcasts, if you follow any of my stuff, the most important thing I do from a betting perspective or a just a DFS, whatever kind of knowledge you want about the course, the event, the sporting event in general that's going on, look at those cheat sheets that I have, the spreadsheets, all the numbers on there. I know it can be hard to digest a lot of it, but if you want to just have a snapshot of information of, you know, what I want to bet on these guys, but I want to know what he's done in the last six events. Well, guess what? You can look at my cheat sheet and it tells you every single golfer, the last six events they've had on tour. Is that six or is that seven? That looks like seven. That's seven events on tour last 5 years at this event, what they've done. It's just, it gives you a quick little rundown of everybody. So it's just, you don't have to listen to me. I'm stupid. But those numbers really help out. So if you do anything, look at my spreadsheets, my cheat sheets, and that will, that's helped me become a better than average gambler and better than average fantasy sports player by far. So I think that's where really the money lies here. So good luck this week. I hope I can help you out. We should have a good one here. Let's win some money.